You have been listening to EcoJustice Radio, a project of SoCal 350. Executive producer, myself, Jack Eit. Co-host, Jessica Aldridge. Co-host, Carrie Kim. And engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Camp is in session. Join us at the KBOO station on Friday, May 2nd from 6 to 9 p.m. for KBOO's monthly First Friday pop-up gallery event. Come to Camp KBOO and join us around the mic for an evening of live music, artists, vendors, drinks, food, and more. We can't wait to see you there.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps, stories from here and there. I'm Joseph.
I am Tyson.
Join us every other Thursday at 10 a.m. as we discuss exciting destinations around the world. They're not always from personal experience, but never without cultural awareness and a passion for travel.
Deep within Mammoth Cave, National Park's labyrinthine passages, a lone explorer stumbled upon an ancient stalactite, its crystalline beauty frozen in time. As they reached out to touch it, the sound of dripping water echoed through the darkness, and they felt the weight of centuries of secrets hidden beneath their feet.
Hello, and welcome to Life Stamps Stories from Here and There. I'm Joseph, and I'm here with Tyson. Hello, Tyson.
Hey, Joseph. How you doing today again?
Too bad. And that was Harvey introducing today's topic, which is Mammoth Cave. Tyson, what can you tell us about Mammoth Cave?
Well, they're in Kentucky, the state of Kentucky in the United States. I'm sure, obviously, people in the United States know where Kentucky is. For, you know, our listeners abroad, that's kind of southeast United States, near other states like Tennessee and I don't live in this part of the country. What are some of the neighboring states of Kentucky again? I think it borders Ohio.
Ohio
to the north. So it's kind of on the convergence of southern, southeast United States and Midwest. Kentucky is, because I think also you can connect to Illinois, I think, through Kentucky if you go west from there as well.
It's the Mason-Dixie line, right, which separates the north from the south.
Yeah, in old Civil War terms and stuff like that, I think, as well. These caves are the biggest cave system in the United States, so that's why we're talking about it today. They're quite impressive. There's a lot of guided tours. It's a national park. It's called Mammoth Caves National Park, Kentucky. In the state of Kentucky, for anybody that would like to visit them. The national park itself is completely free. However, the different type of cave tours, which I'll get into later, if you chose to do any of the cave tours within Mammoth Caves, are different prices depending on kind of like the activity and how long you would be in there. But I'll get to that later as I kind of go through the different, I want to talk about more about location and stuff like logistics about getting to the park right now. So yeah, the park is open all year round. So that being said, and there's hiking and other activities to do above ground if you're not going to be exploring caves. So there's camping there. I think there's horseback riding. There's streams and rivers and stuff. It's just kind of like a big, many miles, kilometers of like open meadows and different geology on the top layer for hiking and stuff. So you can actually spend like just 3 days around the park if you wanted to just do a national park, and then reserve 1 day for cave exploring if you wanted to as well when you go to Mammoth Caves National Park. So it's kind of southern Kentucky. So if you were flying to go there, the recommendation I would have would be to either fly into Louisville, which is famous for the Kentucky Derby. I don't know many other things that Louisville is probably famous for. However, that would be the main city of Kentucky to fly into. The other option would probably be more, a little bit of longer of a drive to get there would be to go to Nashville.
Okay.
Nashville, Tennessee's got a lot more to offer, I think, but it's a bit of a longer drive. But if you were going to pair that as like a exploration, checking out Nashville, then driving up north to go to Mammoth Caves after you've explored and done Nashville.
Would it make sense to do a trip like Nashville, Mammoth Caves, and Louisville?
Possibly, if there's stuff that you want to see in Louisville. I just don't have a lot to comment on with Louisville as a city to necessarily say, like, what are some, like, the reasons to visit Louisville, other than if it was happened to be the time of the year for the Kentucky Derby and you're really into, like, the horse jockeying stuff and things like that.
Right.
Kentucky does have whiskey distilleries, if that interests people and stuff as well. I know it's just like Tennessee. So I think a lot of things you can do in Tennessee, you can also do in Kentucky. It's just Kentucky's unique for this national park specifically that I'm aware of.
Gotcha.
Go ahead.
Like, compared to other cave systems in the world, what makes the Mammoth Cave system so unique?
That's a good question. One factoid I did have, I'm trying to see where it was. Oh, man, I can't see it in my notes right now. But I want to tell you how big the actual site was. Oh, here it is. So yeah, it's the longest network of cave system in the world, actually. So this spans 53,000 acres of within the park is all connected karst cave system within Mammoth Caves National Park. So 53,000 acres is huge. Like, it's a massive amount of land.
Yeah, it's massive.
So that's what's unique, is just the actual overall size of the system, the cave system itself. Now, that being said, I remember we had talked in Vietnam about the largest cave in the world, and that is the largest cave from, you know, top to bottom. It's like, if you're inside that cave within Vietnam, it's like a skyscraper and then some, in terms of like from floor to ceiling of the actual height depth of the cave. And I don't think the longest cave in the world is actually in this park either, but this is the largest cave system in terms of connectivity of other passages and stuff. May not be one the longest continuous passage, but it's going to be the largest web of cave network, if you will.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So
for like a first time visitor, what's what are some tour experiences that you'd recommend?
Well, I'm going to see if I got anything else to talk to you about. Oh, yeah. So there's a town That's close to the park. If you're not trying to camp in the park, depending on the time of year that you go, because like I said, it is open all year round, so you could actually, you know, bundle up and then do some snowshoeing and stuff in the park, and then probably still explore certain caves if they're open in the wintertime as well. And a town that's kind of recommended to post up, if say you were trying to stay at a hotel or cabins or something, is called Horse Cave, Kentucky.
Okay.
And Horse Cave, Kentucky is a town that's close to the park. You know, it's probably only going to be a 25-minute, half-hour drive into the park from Horse Cave. And Horse Cave offers things like safaris, not like the way we think about safaris in the African sense of like those kind of exotic animals and those kind of exotic species, but more like, you know, North American kind of species of bison and buffalo and some other things. I think they may have like a safari park and they could take you around there from that town. It's kind of like a little tourist town because it's close to the park, but they've got their own cave within the park that I do think is free that you can explore there as well. They have zip lining and hiking or like right around that town as well. So it's kind of like, you know, I guess it's kind of like the cupcake before you get the big birthday cake.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, to be staying in Horse Cave, you can kind of get a little miniature of all that stuff within that town. But then, you know, you drive in and do like more of the adventurous things within the actual national park.
I see.
What else do I have to say about that? Oh, there are a few things that are illegal in the park.
Okay, they're illegal.
So, yeah, that are illegal. So I gotta mention this to all people and stuff. I think some of it should kind of go without saying, but so Kentucky is a very conservative state, and so they have, you know, very, very lax gun laws and stuff. They're kind of like an open carry state. You'll probably, maybe people would see people with guns and stuff or whatever. You know, you've got a very big hunting culture and stuff there too. So if that's the kind of person you are, you can fish in the park and you can eat what you catch, but you can't hunt in the park.
Essentially, you cannot hunt.
Yep.
Got it.
So hunting is illegal in the park, and drones are illegal in the park.
Okay.
So no drone footage and stuff like that. And I think it's because that also somewhat messes with the wildlife in the park and stuff, and maybe like the migration of birds and some other things. I think maybe quite prevalent different times of the year. And then just some tips is like don't use flash photography within the caves. You know, because that messes with the nocturnal creatures that live within the caves. And then it's not recommended to have like big trekking, you know, backpacks. You know, some people, like, they may like to go hiking and then be like, oh, now I'm just going to go to the cave, but I've got this massive backpack, you know, and try to get through tight crevices and caverns within the cave. That's not recommended. You want to pack light, you know, just kind of your headlamp. And, you know, just your water and snacks and stuff while you're within the cave. Baby carriers as well. You know, they don't really allow baby strollers. So for families, they need to kind of take their toddler in the front pouch kind of thing or whatever. So, yeah. you know, so that's that. It's recommended to bring a jacket and good shoes and a headlamp. Obviously, you know, it's colder in the cave and you want to be able to see. And as far as individual caves for when you're planning tours, it's nps.gov, which stands for National Park Service. And then if you type in Mammoth Caves, that'll always tell you currently which caves are open for exploring and for tours within the park. So if you really got your mindset on a specific cave because of the geology or because of the trekking that's involved within that cave, and you're planning to go, you want to make sure that that cave will be open upon you arriving to the park. And one more thing, if you're doing a tour that they pick you up in a shuttle type thing, you schedule that kind of thing where you can't just drive to the location and just kind of do it and free explore, because I think there are a few free exploration activities within certain systems, but some systems, like, they don't allow people to free explore. You kind of have to do the tour, you know? So one, maybe a paid entry, free explorer kind of version where they're okay with that. Another could be that they are going to pick you up with a shuttle. So they want you to be at the visitor center within the park 30 minutes before the actual shuttle comes to pick everybody up because they don't like to leave late.
Okay. So some are free explorers, some are always people check like the cave that you're going to and what's available.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's kind of all the rundown about, like, most things you need to know about the park. But like I said, NPS, nationalparkservices.gov, Mammoth Caves, you know, will give you the most current information for anything once you're, like, you're, you know, getting close to go explore the park and stuff, you know. And but it is nice because it is completely free except for, like, going to the caves. So, yeah. You know.
So, I'm... just because you mentioned wildlife and stuff, I'm curious, what kind of wildlife could we expect to see when we're, you know, is there a lot of wildlife that lives inside the caves and also just like in the area in general?
There is. I didn't, my research didn't really lend me to a whole lot of that. You know, I think you've kind of got like mountain fox, lynx, probably deer, potentially. Elk may, herds of elk may migrate through the park periodically. It's not like Yellowstone, though, where it's just like, you know, just these unruly giant creatures, you know, that are just kind of happen to be log jamming traffic like buffalo and stuff. You know, I don't think you get as much of that. And I don't think there's actually as many roads going through Mammoth Cave as there are Yellowstone. Because, you know, Yellowstone's so much about going to the scene, the geysers and all the different things within the park. I think Mammoth Cave has only got a couple roads really going through the whole park itself. Mm-hmm. So, you know. Well, it is. I mean, they got like a north west campsite, and I think they have like a central campsite. I think they may have like a southeast campsite. But it's not like littered with campsites like Yellowstone, for example, or whatever. And then various roads that are recommended to drive and take this way or this way, you know, to like, because, yeah, like you're saying, more of it's about people coming to, you know, go into the cave system.
Okay. Is there anything you could tell me about just like how the caves formed, like the geology and how they, you know, what are they formed from?
Yes. Now I'm going by memory here because I can't find that in my notes, but
if essentially
in geological terms, it was a giant lake.
Okay.
It was a giant lake that had, you know, formed sedimentary deposits over time in the region because it is kind of rolling hills and low valleys and stuff with various rivers. And they believed at one point that it was all just kind of like a massive, I mean, we're saying like maybe Hudson Bay size of a lake.
You know,
and then just over time, you know, the evolution of things broke a lot of that down into sand plates and stuff and then made sinkholes and, you know, just kind of, yeah. Once upon a time, they think through like the indigenous population, it was a massive lake. And then, you know, it started just kind of erosionarily forming these caves and, you know, and then people were using, that stuff. So that being said, you know, good question there asking me about like the evolution of the cave, you know, going back millions and millions of years, and then the indigenous people within the state of Kentucky and stuff had used these different passages and stuff for different things among trading amongst other tribes as well and stuff. So that kind of leads me now to talking about some of the different tours, because different tours are specific to different things. Some of them are historical, some of them are prehistorical, some of them are geological. So I'll kick you off with the first one, which is the Discovery Tour, which is one of the self-guided tours that I was telling you about, where you can kind of, you don't have a guide and you can kind of do it because it's not so delicate, the geology within this one. And this is actually only costs $15, and it goes through a 2-century-old path with large trunk passages and many prehistoric artifacts, like, are kind of like preserved within the stone within this cave and stuff. And so I don't think there's a lot of delicate, like, stalagmite or stalactite to touch within the discovery tour, because it is self-guided and stuff of that. And it says it's generally about an hour and a half excursion, this one, you know, about $15 to go in there and self-explore for about an hour and a half and stuff on the discovery tour.
That's awesome.
Now, here's a popular tour that's called Cleveland Avenue Tour. So it's kind of funny. They've actually named some of the passageways within the car system, I think, after, like, you know, former U.S. presidents and stuff. So this one is Cleveland Avenue. This one is a popular tour for, like, definitely the geology nerds. This has got filled with, like, gypsum walls and tube-shaped crystals, passages. And this is about a two-hour guided tour. This one costs $30, but your tour guide should be give you a lot of information about the geology of what you're seeing on the walls and stuff and the gypsum, and explain the erosionary process and how these crystals form over time and, you know, just all that kind of stuff, you know. So this is a kind of your tour to, like, you know, see just the magics of nature, how it's formed over time.
Totally. Yeah, that's awesome. If you're just tuning in, this is 90.7 FM Portland. KBOO, 90.7 FM Portland is what I meant to say. You're listening to Life Stamps, Stories from Here and There, and today we are talking about the Mammoth Caves in Southern Kentucky. So Mammoth Caves National Park, and just about all the different types of experiences you can do, and just the breadth of the caves. I think the thing that's really stuck out to me is just how big the system is. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, cave system in the world. And so that's pretty cool, because there's just lots to explore, lots of different experiences. I think what's interesting is it seems like there's a lot of history tied to the caves, from, like, early, you know, Native American use to tourism. Do you have, like, any stories about, I don't know, like, maybe before the caves were a national park, what they might have been used for, or anything, like, any historical facts?
You know, I did read about some of that, and like I said, it was tied somewhat to the indigenous populations of Southern Kentucky, and, you know, I mean, not that I can really speculate on time and era, how many different tribes kind of maybe would have resided in the valley area, you know, which was once a giant lake and stuff, you know, and the cave systems. But I think some of it might have been, you know, protection. Some of it might have been set up to trade. You know, it's always nice to, I think in these times, to make a free market underground where a lot of people aren't seeing you trade stuff because of raiders.
Right.
And things like that. If you're trading furs, if you're trading stone, whatever, you know, and things of that nature. So I think the caves were somewhat set up as, like, you know, an ancient safe place to do business as well, you know. So but yeah, that is about all I can comment on that, unfortunately, because I didn't really dive into that information.
Most sense, like, you know, hiding things in caves where people can't find them easily. It's like before security systems and alarms and, you know, high-tech locks and stuff. It's like, where are you gonna put your stuff? Put them underground, why not?
Yeah Well, anyways, I'm going to kind of speed us along for a few more tours, because I do have some geological information I want to throw at you too, you know, which will be kind of connected to our trivia for today. So another tour is the Domes and Dripstones Tour. This starts in a big sinkhole in the ground. It goes through many huge, like, you know, massive, like, cavern domes, and ends in a dripstone area, which is called the Frozen Niagara, because it looks like a frozen waterfall from the dripstone. That one is $30. And so this is kind of your best cave for the actual stalactite, stalagmite formations and stuff. Similarly, you know, it's a good one for geological enthusiasts. Then we have one that's called the Gothic Avenue Tour. And this is more the historic cave. And I think some of your questions with natural Gothic arches that have formed and many artifacts and monuments are kind of preserved within the stone. And so this is definitely, this is best for people that are kind of interested in kind of like the Civil War 1800s history and stuff, you know, so it has some important facts with that tour, you know, talking about how they used the cave during the, that time. That one's a $23 price ticket. The Grand Avenue Tour is the best one for somebody that really wants to get all in the cave. This one's 4 hours. This is like a half day cave tour that goes through like slot canyons, tube passageways. So I think there are some crawl spots. There are tall canyons and tunnels. And this, like I was saying, it's like a half day hike. And, you know, this is the most expensive of them all because this is a whole half day excursion within the cave, and that's $42. And then there's the historic tour, which is semi-adventurous, that goes into narrow spaces as well and covers a lot of history, and that one's $24. So for the most part, most of them are about no more than $30 for 2 hours, but then you have one that's like a half day that's kind of more like in the 40 some range or whatever.
Okay.
You know, and there are different, I think what you were asking me about more of like the prehistoric history, I think it's all that's very well, I think, covered in like the cave tour that focuses on the prehistoric history. So, yeah. So, that's kind of there's more tours than this, but these are like some of the main ones that I wanted to kind of talk about, just to kind of give an overview.
If you were going to do your own tour, if you're going to go to Mammoth Caves, what would you like? What's like a basic itinerary that you might set up? I know you mentioned like flying into Nashville, but like, what if you're planning this trip for next week? Like, what would be the itinerary that you set up?
Ooh, that's a good question. I guess I would have to first try to decide how much time I want to spend in or around the park. So, you know, I know some people, they go to Yellowstone for a week. You know what I mean? So then, you know, then the city is just like a little kind of pop in, spend a little bit of time there, go straight to Yellowstone, spend all your time in nature, and then come back and then just spend a little bit of time back in, say, Missoula, for example, if that's where you were flying in of to go to Yellowstone. I think Mammoth Cave could be similarly, if you're all about the nature and you're going to just go for a week, then yeah, I would say you fly into Nashville, you just check it out for a night, spend a lot of time around Mammoth Cave area and stuff, you know, doing all these nature activities different days, and you know, maybe various cave tours, and then come back and spend the last night in Nashville and leave. Okay. I would myself would probably be more interested in only going to the park for maybe two or three nights, you know, and get in a cabin. So then I would actually spend a lot of time in Nashville to check out the honky tonk music and the food and everything that Nashville has to offer and its southern charm. You know, Nashville's a pretty cool city for its own right and the things that it's got going on. So I think it would really just depend on the person. I think a week is fine either way, but you may break up that week to, you know, having more time in the city, less in nature, or vice versa.
Totally. Yes. It's more about like, do you want to like have some like city time, or do you just want to spend the entire time in nature in the park?
Right. Or if you're doing a road trip, then, you know, obviously then you just figure out how you pop it in, you know, cause I know people like to do like month long road trips in the summer as well. So, you know, you could be going from Chicago all the way to New Orleans, you know, on a road trip, for example.
Yeah.
And that could be quite a great place to stop, you know, as one of your stops in that month long road trip or something as well.
Yeah, that makes sense too, for sure.
So I think it just depends. But for me, and like a lot of us are on the West Coast, I think we'd just be thinking about flying. And so therefore, I think we would probably just think about flying into Louisville or into Nashville.
Yeah,
I would be more keen on Nashville myself. It just seems like a little bit more interesting of a city to me than Louisville. But I'm sure there's good things to explore and see and do within Louisville as well.
Totally. Speaking of like, you know, when to go or whenever, like what would be the best time of year to visit?
Spring and fall, I would say for sure, because it's very hot and sticky in Kentucky in the summertime. I mean, the caves, yeah, you'll cool off when you do the cave thing, but you know, but as far as like exploring the park and stuff, you know, there's probably going to be quite sweltering with a lot of mosquitoes. And like I had mentioned before, the winter thing is, you know, it's going to be very cold probably in those caves in the winter time. But on the other hand, if you're very much a snow activity person, you can explore all of the free parts of the park and enjoy all the splendors of winter within the park outside. Would say that not all the caves would be open for passage in the winter time too, just because of, you know, snow and stuff.
Can you hear me okay?
I can, but it's just kind of, you know, muffling in and out, I think, a little bit. So yeah.
Yeah. Just some technical difficulties over here. I think my mic is dead.
Oh no. Okay, so Joseph's mic died, but I can still hear him.
I'm gonna just the phone mic now, so hopefully that works.
Okay. One more little subject of stuff. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about different types of geology that is kind of common to cave systems and definitely these cave systems.
Cool. And then I think we have a little trivia round that we're going to do.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll be asking you some questions about some of this stuff. First thing I'm going to talk about is limestone.
Mm-hmm.
And the limestone in Mammoth Caves is said to believe to be 330 million years old, from which, like I was saying before, that they believe now southern Kentucky was believed to be a giant lake or, you know, part of the Atlantic Ocean, maybe even. So, you know, so considered the most soluble of all the rocks within the cave is the limestone, you know. Essentially, you take salt deposits from the bottom of the ocean floor and it just builds up over time and makes limestone. But because there's so much salt within the rock, it's the most soluble.
Mm. Is that, which cave is that? Or is that all of the caves?
All of the caves have limestone.
The 330 million years old?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm trying to get my memory so I don't forget.
Yeah. Good. And then we've got what's shell, spelled S-H-A-L-E, or shell. It's considered a form of petrified clay and mud. It's not porous or sort of makes an insulation layer over the limestone in cave chambers. So, you know, you've got the big, like, passageways of the cave and stuff, then the holes and stuff, and that's all kind of like limestone. And so if you imagine kind of like a hardened mud layer over time, would have just kind of been the sealant, you know, and that's how less water gets in and less cave collapsing type of thing. So essentially that petrified mud is called shell.
I see. Interesting.
And then you have sandstone, which is a continental compression of sand and minerals, but it's not oceanic. So this is not of really like the salt compound, like from the ocean minerals, but of just the sand and minerals. And it's more resistant to erosion, obviously, because of the, you know, it's like natural sand and minerals kind of combined together to form this layer. Usually it ends up being the top layer of a car system. So essentially they're saying you find a petrified shell, mud or whatever, you'll probably start seeing like other sedimentary deposits of this like sandstone. You know what I mean? And that's usually kind of an indication that there may be a car system nearby or something. These are what the
car system. What is that? How do you spell that?
Karst. K-A-R-S. Karst.
Got it.
Yeah. It's essentially means it's an erosionary system of passageways from minerals. And then another type of geology would be a dolomite.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a newer rock system formed in the pool of limestone with magnesium-rich waters. So essentially you get that limestone, you know, crusty layer I was talking about at the bottom of the ocean, but within a cave system. And then if you get the drips of like magnesium rich water, it will form these new rock systems, which are called dolomites.
I see.
Yeah. So it's basically rocks coming out of the pool on top of the limestone. In the cave, and then this goes back to the indigenous population, they could scrape the walls within the caves for a type of material called chert.
Okay.
And this is also commonly known as flint. So essentially this was just, you know, all the native populations gathered tons of chert in the cave so they could easily strike and make fires. Cool. You know, so chert is essentially flint. It grows out of limestone as well. And was, yeah, used by indigenous people for tools and weapons, because this also was kind of easy to shape, you know, and spark and make hammers and knives and all types of other, you know, tools and weapons and stuff for survival. And so it is a very useful material, you know, just knock out a bunch of that chert from the cave walls and start making your supplies. This one's kind of exactly what it sounds like. The name is called conglomerate. And it's the same process as sandstone that was formed from a lake or a river, but with faster currents. So essentially, when I was talking about the sandstone, that was kind of the top layer, that would be more of like a lake evaporating over time that just kind of forms like that solid sandstone, but it's less soluble because it doesn't have the salt component. And conglomerate is like more from like fast moving streams that have evaporated over time, so the rocks and the pebbles had moved faster and didn't form together in a tight compressed slate, if you will. So you can see those like slabs of rock that have little tiny rocks in them, that's conglomerate, because that means it came more from a fast moving stream as opposed to just like a slow moving river or, you know, a lake.
I see. So it's just a faster forming sandstone in a way.
Yeah, because it's got bigger pebbles and stuff, you know, that didn't erode and, you know, compress, you know, in a longer period of time. It didn't have time to break down and then form into a bigger slab, if you will. It just kind of moved.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's what conglomerate is. It's like kind of like semi erosionary plate of sand, if you will. And yeah, so that's pretty much it. I think I'm going to take us away to trivia now and see how much you've been listening today and, you know, see what goes on with that.
My best to retain, I hope I retain some information, but, you know, we'll see.
Okay.
Okay, now let's move on to trivia and comments. Trivia time. Trivia time, hip hip hooray. Listener comments as well, handled the life stamps way. Today and every day.
All right. As always, thank you for that little intermission, Harvey. What do you call that? Like when you go from one thing to another. Transition. That's what it's called. Anyway, if you're just tuning in.
Harvey's wonderful segues. Harvey's basically the host of our trivia hour. You know that? So he's kind of like, you know.
Harvey's wonderful segues. Exactly.
Do you ever, you think Harvey's ever been caving?
You know, that's a really good question.
Yeah. I mean,
does Harvey have arms and legs? I've only really seen his head light up.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he's got components. He's like, what do you call it? He's got prosthetics.
Yeah.
He's got prosthetics, so he can put on different gear for different activities and stuff. I think he enjoys caving, actually. Because he knew a lot about the stalactites as we start today's show.
That's true. He seemed to be excited about it. Well, if you're just
and you can be as snarky as you want over there, Joseph. But I'm going to tell you that Harvey probably knows more about this stuff than you do. So I'm going to ask you now.
Wait. Before you ask me, I just need to say the station ID. So if you're tuning in, This is 90.7 FM Portland, KBOO. Wait, do I say KBOO first? This is KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. You're listening to Life Stamp Stories from Here and There. Today we're talking about the Mammoth Caves in Southern Kentucky, and Tyson is about to grill me on trivia because he expects me to remember every single thing that he told me in the last half hour.
Well, I just hope that, you know, you listen sometimes. But regardless, we'll see if you do or if you have not. It's all good.
All right, late on.
First question, Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of the only substance defined as a crystal found inside the Mammoth Caves? I'm going to give you a hint.
Uh-huh.
When I was talking about cave tours, I talked about one cave tour that had it as the cave tour that you would see the most crystals.
I remember you talking about this. I remember all the different types of layers too. There's like sandstone and shale and the salt limestone. So you said limestone, and then it has like a layer of sandstone over it, and then the shale layer over that. But
you're not talking about the crystals. You're not talking about the crystals, bruh. That's all right, because those crystals are called gypsum.
Gypsum. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go for one, Joseph.
All right.
See if you can get back into, the average club here.
Okay, ask me something I do know.
I talked about the longest cave tour you can do at Mammoth Caves National Park. That's like a half day, 4-hour excursion. What was the name of that tour?
Come on. You talked about so many tours. Half day excursion. Cleveland.
Wouldn't it be
Cleveland Avenue?
Nope. Okay. I was going to give you a hint, but you already shot yourself in the foot. Sorry. That's 0-2, Joseph. That would be the Grand Avenue tour. Wouldn't it be grand to do a half day in the caves?
Grand Avenue. Okay, well, I was right with the Avenue thing, so you can't say I wasn't totally not listening.
If you were going to stay at that random little town that's only about a half hour from the park that has zip lining, hiking, and safari and other things, activities to do, what's the name of it? What's the name of that town?
Horse Cave.
Horse Cave, Kentucky. There you go.
Haha.
2-1, Joseph.
All right.
So you get one more, you're back in the, you know, the average club. What activities are illegal in the park?
Oh, drones, hunting.
That's it?
Oh, okay.
I didn't say anything else. So you don't need to. I mean, you can look for them, but those are the main things. Those are the main things that are...
Like stealing, kidnapping.
What's that?
Well, I was going to say like stealing. Stealing is probably illegal.
Yeah, you can't take the precious artifacts and stuff from the caves. You know, I think these kind of go without saying. So, you already nailed it. There you are. Back in the average club.
All right.
The name of the flint-type stone that was first used by the indigenous people for crafting weapons and tools?
Was that shale?
No.
I remember you were going off. You were talking about how it's a stone that's used for crafting tools. People would harvest it for starting fires. And it's not shale. It's what is it?
It's called chert. Chert. Yep. Or maybe it's pronounced chert, but regardless, I
gotcha.
Got it as chert. So now where are we at? 2-3. 2-3.
Okay.
Let's see if you can get back to the average club.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of the tour that starts in a sinkhole and has the most amount of stalactites and stalagmites?
or it's in a sinkhole, and it has the most amount of stalactites and stalagmites. The name of the tour starts in a sinkhole. Is that the Cleveland Avenue tour?
That is not the Cleveland Avenue tour. Sorry, Cleveland. Joseph has been, he's got, you know, his mind on you, but you didn't come through for us on the trivia question. That would be the Domes and Dripstones tour.
Dripstones tour. Domes.
So, yeah, the key word there is dripstones because it's stalactites.
I like It's a nice little, Domes and dripstones are the dripstones.
Now, this one I'm going to give you a point regardless because this is open for interpretation as long as you kind of say something. I think that's kind of in the realm of good practice. What are the best things to do before visiting the park?
Research and...
What do you mean by research?
Research, like the tours that you want to do. Book the tours that you want to do. Know where you're going to stay. Research the weather. So like what clothes to wear.
Yeah.
Figure out how you're going to get there. So what are you going to fly? Are you going to drive? What city are you going to fly into? Look up if there's any music festivals happening in Nashville.
Oh yeah. Where does Bonnaroo happen? Do you know what state? The Bonnaroo Music Festival?
Is that Illinois?
No, I definitely think it's a southern state that it happens. Yeah, it might be Virginia, it might be Kentucky, it may be Tennessee. I'm not sure.
Tennessee. Manchester, Tennessee.
Okay. Well, let's see. There you go. Yeah. That would be your music festival. For sure. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. I mean, the main takeaway I had from there is mostly there's also heavy rains in the springtime, the snowstorms in the winter, you know, so these can affect your ability for a certain cave tour, you know, so you always just kind of want to see which cave tours are available for your time when you go. And yeah, so that's pretty much that. I'm going to move on to listener comments today, Joseph. You did all right. I think you got about 50% of those right, you know.
Woohoo! I think that's my best score yet.
Yeah, doesn't that rock?
It rocks, it stones, it graphites.
Yeah, you just keep moving on up, like slowly, but you just slowly keep moving on up like a slow forming stalagmite.
Maybe next time I'll get a D.
Maybe. Yeah, that is true.
I'm really for that.
Okay, Joseph, I got a question here from Natalie Lundquist from Quebec, Montreal. Hey, Tyson and Joseph. Have either one of you gone scuba diving? I'm not certified yet. I'm curious which places would you guys recommend in the world to start and begin?
So I know that people will have gone scuba diving where they just go to the place and they take a course and then they do it. So I don't think the
certification on site.
Yeah.
Scuba programs, right?
The barrier to entry is pretty low. You just have to go through the program, get certified and stuff. But I've heard of people doing that in the Philippines as a popular location.
Okay.
And then maybe other oceanic countries Australia, I think, is a popular place to go scuba diving.
Yeah, the Great Barrier Reef and everything.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, I'm not sure if this is these are common places to go, but I would imagine a lot of the island countries and Oceania could be good places to go scuba diving as well.
Yeah. I'm going to just comment. I think actually your voice sounds better without the lapel mics.
Really?
By the way, yeah. In the near future, if you don't get a mic, maybe just kind of we'll do it this way because I think the audio quality is kind of coming through a little better now.
Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing. I've been told many Central American destinations have fairly affordable scuba diver certification places and stuff, Nicaragua, Guatemala and stuff, El Salvador. Thailand's a great place for scuba diving. I think their certifications there are fairly affordable as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing to consider with scuba diving is you got to spend a bit more time in that destination to make the certification, like for how long it's going to take you to get certified at that spot before you can actually do a dive and stuff, you know. So you'll have to be committing to some time. It's not like you're just going to be like, all right, I get there one day, I'm certified, and then I think I do a deep dive the next day. I don't think it happens that quickly. So I think there is some commitment to time with destination for scuba travel first time beginners, I think.
Totally.
Natalie. So yeah, hopefully we can give you some things to think about there. So this guy is just called Paul the Traveling Tarot Man.
Okay, Paul the Traveling Tarot Man. What's Paul got to say?
Paul the Traveling Tarot Man says, "Hey, Joseph and Tyson, I have a suggestion for a future episode. What do you guys think about covering little towns to stay in along a famous train route anywhere in the world?"
What's the longest train route?
He's got a suggestion for an episode that we would do a deep dive on a train route and talk about the little towns along that train route, you know, for popping on and off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's I could tell you some things that come to mind when I hear that I'm familiar with, that I've done a little bit of research. There's obviously the Siberian Express in Russia. You know, I mean, but that's massive. I've heard that's like a month-long affair.
You're going to ride it the entire without stopping. It's like 5 or 6 days. But
sure.
You want to stop, you want to get off, stay in, you know, towns along the way.
Right. I think this is more about, yeah, not, you know, spending the whole time, you know, creaking around on a train and stuff. You know, it's a great way to see the countryside. But I think some of it's just about getting off on a town and then being there for a day or two and then just being able to get back on go to the train station and get back on the route.
I think long train rides are great in big countries. Like, that's what I would be interested in, like taking that train through India. Feels like a thing to do. China feels like that could be interesting as well, like taking a slow train to, you know, different towns, maybe through like central China. And then the US, I think that could be an interesting, you know, planning a route from coast to coast, for example.
I think if Paul here actually is a tarot reader, since he's the traveling tarot man, I think maybe the thought there would be like, you know, you hang out in a town for a little bit, you know, talk to people, charge a little bit of money, give some readings, but especially pass some time on the train, you know, you can give tarot readings to people as you make new friends on the train and stuff.
Totally.
Dave, you heard, I think it's been implemented now. I think there's a train from Buenos Aires to Lima, Peru, like an Andean train or something like this, that I think they constructed about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my first choice. Honestly, I would love to go through the Andes by train.
Buenos Aires to Lima?
Yeah.
Super fun, actually, and going through the mountains. I think those train rides are so fun, going through like mountainous terrain. You see all the different vistas, and you know, like you want to take a slow train. You want to take something where you can really like take in the views. It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever ridden the Coast Starlight from, it goes like from Seattle down to LA.
No, I've taken parts of that. I've taken the train from Emeryville, which is basically where you catch it if you're trying to get the train from San Francisco, and I've taken that all the way back to Portland before, and that's pretty nice in terms of like where it takes you through Southern Oregon and stuff, you know, Klamath Falls to Eugene to Corvallis to Salem, and I think south of there you're kind of going through Nevada. If I remember right, it went through Reno.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it went east from Emeryville to Reno, and then it went up through Southern Oregon that way, through Klamath Falls and stuff. So, pretty good train ride.
Yeah, I think that area between Emeryville and Eugene, where it's kind of more mountainous and rural and stuff, you see a lot of those like cool vistas. I remember there's like times where you're going through a super long tunnel, and when you get out of the tunnel, you're just on a cliff. Pretty much.
Yeah.
But I remember, it's been a while since I've done that train ride, but I think that's That's been something I've been wanting to do for a while, is just like do a train trip through the U.S. and just
right.
Bus that way.
Well, Paul just inspired me. I think I am. I'm going to research. I'm going to research that Andean train, because I'm familiar with it a little bit, but I haven't really gone into deep details about like the stops along the route and stuff. And if I can find out enough information, I'll. We're going to report about that on a future episode.
Yeah.
I decided right now.
Well, Tyson, I think we are about out of time, so it's time to wrap up.
Yeah, I got like just this question doesn't interest me. It's about money and logistics while traveling, from somebody. You know, I'm not going to answer that.
Give you three more minutes, and then we gotta wrap things up.
Yeah. Oh, here's something about future stuff. When are you guys going to incorporate video? You had mentioned that you guys were working on it several times in many seasons prior, and you're still just audio only. And this comes from Elizabeth Crone from Bath, England. Elizabeth, no, we're not doing video right now. Things are just kind of changing with the show, and we're just going to videos like baby steps. We're going to maybe work our way into video later down the road, but for the time being, it's just we're trying to figure out what we're going to want to do with the show. We would like to actually showcase some like pictures and some stills and like short video that kind of highlights the topic of the week or the destination of the week.
Yeah.
And stuff, but maybe not so much of like the talking heads of me and Joseph and stuff. So, you know, they're just social media. We'll have some video shorts and stuff like that.
Yeah. Now that we're doing this new app where we're like recording our video as well, I could see us being able to use some of that footage.
Yeah, we can do it with our social media and stuff. But with that in mind, I want to say to anybody else, you know, you want to have your comments answered on our show, as always, look for the comment box on Spotify. Otherwise, you know, our Instagram is LifeStamps2021. There, that can be found on Instagram, so you can still DM us, you know, any question, and then, you know, we can read it on future shows and stuff. So yeah, any suggestions or any questions you would just like to have us answer, we'll continue to do that, you know.
Sounds good.
Time.
Well, yeah, you KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamp Stories from Here and There. When if you admit if you're just tuning in, or you tuned in halfway through, this episode will be coming out on Spotify on Sunday. So just look for us on, search for Life Stamps on Spotify. You'll see this episode. You can listen to the whole thing there. Yeah, with that being said, thank you for listening. This has been a great episode. Thanks, Tyson, for all the info about Mammoth Caves, super cool national park. And yeah, until next time.
We keep it rocking.
Keep it rocking. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. Until next time, happy traveling.
David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification.